This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
Jazakallah, Malana Fahim, Mufti Fahim Sahab, for that. Alhamdulillah, Alhamdulillah, ya ala hilmi ba'da ilmi, wa ala afwi ba'da qudrati, wa salatu wa salamu ala sayyidil anbiya'i wal mursaleen, wa ala alihi wa ashabihi, wa salama tasliman kathiran kathira. أما بعد فأعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم إنما يخشى الله من عباده العلماء صدق الله العظيم. Respected ulama, elders, brothers, and all of those who are listening on the Zoom platform, the beloved students who are here in front of me, we first begin by praising Almighty Allah, sending salutations upon our beloved Nabi Kareem sallallahu alaihi wasallam. Firstly, let me say from the very outset, I'm not in any way worthy of speaking on such great people like Shaykhul Islam Hazrat Maulana Hussain Ahmad Madani Rahmatullah Ali. However, there is a certain inclination that has developed over the years in my temperament to read about Maulana Hussain Ahmad Madani Rahmatullah Ali. I have read certain books and I will be sharing some of the aspects of his life. And I must say, every time I read about Maulana, different aspects of his life come to the fore. And it's just almost every time you read, another dimension of his life come. And I will try my utmost to speak about it. And we all know that in many ways, the views of Shaykhul Islam about politics are very different from what normally we are accustomed to about the views of ulama on politics. In fact, when we do make mention of it, sometimes it will be quite revealing with regard to some of his views. I will relate it without taking a view on it myself, because I don't think I'm worthy with regard to it, but I will make mention of his views, and his views are well documented. So let me start off and say that Hazrat Maulana Hussain Ahmad Madani Rahmatullah Ali, obviously here I'm going to encourage people to do some reading with regard to it. So one of the great things that we can benefit from the life of Shaykhul Islam is his comprehensive personality. It is something that I've put out on the very first slide. And the reason I make mention of this is because that is one of the things that are so attractive about his personality and his teaching. So on one hand, he was the rector, and he was a Sheikh al-Hadith, who taught Hadith in Masjid al-Nabawi for 18 years, and he taught Hadith in Darul Ulum Dioban, the Amir of Jamiatul Ulama Hind, a spiritual guide for many. He was a Sheikh of Tasawwuf. People used to take bayt to him. You know, I have met people in South Africa who had taken bayt to Hazrat, or at least were spiritually attached to Hazrat Shaykhul Islam Rahmatullah Ali, a community builder. He was a person who had great amount of leadership qualities. And one of the amazing things, he was a community activist, a political activist, a person who fought for freedom against the British. He was in the forefront of the freedom movement, and he was very, very passionate against British colonial rule, not only in India, but throughout the world. It will be quite revealing as we go on to say that some of his statements were as a motivation for other countries to resist colonialism. So as an alim in a village in Dioban, he was sitting and looking at the vision of getting other countries in the world who were at that time under the yoke of colonialism free from colonialism, you know. And this, it tells you much about the vision of ulama. Normally people complain and say ulama have blinkers and they don't think with regard to the world politics. Hazrat Maulana was speaking about African and other countries, third world countries, you know, resisting and throwing out the yoke of colonialism. And this is in his writings, as I will go on to make mention. He was an intellectual debater on the strategic vision for Muslims in South Asia. So he used to sit and discuss matters with politicians in the time. You know, there's so many different, you know, incidents with regard to people coming to him right up to the end of his life. In his one of his readings, and let me just very briefly make mention of some of the books that I've read on Hazrat Shaykh ul Islam. The one that first, you know, got my attention, it is an Urdu book by the name of Asirane Malta, The Captives and the Prisoners of Malta, written by Hazrat Maulana Sayyid Muhammad Mia, and thereafter it was translated by the Jamiatul Ulama Hind. And because of my passion on this matter, one day I took this book on one of my trips for Hajj. And in Mina, I met Maulana Sayyid Muhammad Arshad Madani, and I told him that I got a book of your respected father, and I would like you to write a few words on the beginning of the book. So on the book and the copy that I have, Maulana Arshad Madani, that means the son of the illuminate, the great Maulana Madani Rahmatullah Ali, has written some words on my own copy on Maulana Sayyid Shaykh ul Islam. Then another book that is very interesting, a biographical study by D.R. Goyal, which is written by a non-Muslim. And another book which I've just started reading and I just came half caught away and I couldn't complete it, was written by Barbara Metcalf. And recently, we know that Naqsh-e Hayat was the autobiography of Maulana Hussain Ahmad Madani Rahmatullah Ali. He wrote it in Urdu. It is very voluminous. It is very lengthy. But it's not an autobiography in the normal sense of the word. Normally, an autobiography, a person writes about his life. Much of the autobiography of Shaykh al-Islam is about the freedom struggle. And it is about other ulama who have resisted colonial activities. And he wrote much about many other ulama, and I will make mention with regard to it. And so, and then also in the book, he wrote much about the harms that came upon India because of British colonial rule. So almost a substantial percentage of his autobiography is more about the harm that came to India because of British colonial rule rather than his own achievements. So in this particular way, he was an intellectual. He had a great amount of political engagement. He used to speak to the people of there, Gandhi and Nehru. In one of the books I read, that towards the end of his life, Lal Bahadur Shastri, who became the president of, you know, India, he came to visit Maulana and he sat like a student in front of Maulana. And Maulana said, "You are like a minister, come and sit next to me." And he wanted to give him respect. He said, "While we were in prison, I sat at your footstep to benefit from you. And even now afterwards, I will sit here as a student. I won't come and sit next to you." So he had that type of interaction with the politicians of the age. And then also, he was someone who used to speak to the ulama of the age. Right? So he used to go to Maulana Thanvi Rahmatullah Ali. We all know Maulana Thanvi Rahmatullah Ali, known for his fame in terms of tasawuf. And there's a very famous incident. If I get time, I will make mention of it, how Maulana Hussain Ahmad Madani Rahmatullah Ali made a very amazing trip to go and visit Maulana Thanvi Rahmatullah Ali. It was a very amazing trip. And inshallah, if I get chance towards the end, if you can remind me, I will make mention with regard to that particular trip and what transpired. And just to show you his comprehensive personality. You know, one day someone came to Maulana Thanvi Rahmatullah Ali. If memory serves me correct, I recall reading it in Al-I'tidal of Hazrat Shaykh al-Hadith, Hazrat Maulana Zakaria Sahib Rahmatullah Ali, and said that Maulana Shaykh al-Islam, Maulana Madani Rahmatullah Ali, addresses political gatherings. He takes part in political gatherings. So Maulana Thanvi Rahmatullah Ali replied and said, "You saw him taking part in political gatherings, you didn't see him teach Bukhari till midnight in Deoband. You saw him taking part in political gatherings, you related that to me. Why didn't you also relate that he also taught Bukhari and right up till midnight?" And Maulana had a particular way that whenever he used to come, even if it was late at night, the bell used to be rung and the Darul Uloom students, the Dora students, had to come immediately to Dora Hadith, and Hazrat Maulana used to teach them sometimes right up till the, you know, midnight. So this was his comprehensive personality. And I would really like towards the end speak some about of his spiritual, you know, his greatness. While we concentrate on his political views, I think it's very important towards the end for me to make mention with regard to his piety and his status in terms of his greatness, in terms of his piety and being a wali of Almighty Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So these are some of the things that we will continue. I'm going to, sometimes some of the things I'm going to very briefly and just go through very quickly, right? Because I would like to finish by 10:30 and then inshallah we will try and think. So the first thing is the early life. Now we all know that Maulana Sayyid. So we said Sayyid Muhammad Hussein, so Hussein Ahmed Madani, Sayyid Arshad Madani was a Sayyid. But despite the fact that he was a Sayyid, he, in his autobiography, spent considerable amount of time in writing this particular aspect. And he repeated it many a times. And he used to say that a person who takes only pride in his lineage without good deeds, that lineage has got no value. And then he goes on to elaborate on that particular matter. So while he had the greatest amount of, you know, a greatest lineage, he was very, very, he emphasized the aspect that lineage without amal, without good deeds, does not have much value until you back it up with good deeds. So of course, we all know we show respect to the lineage, but Maulana made mention with regard to it. Of course, he started off in Darul Uloom Deoband. He came there in Darul Uloom Deoband at a very young age, almost 12 and 13 years. Now, he studied in his own particular village. He started off there. His maternal grandparents underwent great amount of difficulty. And Maulana in his autobiography makes mention of it. I'm not going to go into details. That their ancestral lands were usurped by people who had power and influence. But Maulana said that my maternal grandparents made a lot of sabr. And all of that actually happened. So I'm not going to go into it. Just make mention. So when he came to Deoband, he already knew how to read and write. And because he was very, you know, very small in his physique, you know, although he was 13, people used to pass off as 10 and 11. So he said the ustads and many of the families of the ustads used to come call him to write letters for them, because he was amongst those that at that particular time when reading and writing were not as you know, well known and well established. Maulana was, even at a young age, knew how to read and write. So I'm going to keep it at that and just not speak much more about his earlier life. Then we speak about his spiritual association. So Maulana's father was bed to Maulana Fazlur Rahman Ganj Muradabadi. And he wanted Maulana also to follow in the same spiritual footsteps. Maulana was more inclined towards Maulana Rashid Ahmad Gangoi. So he became bed to Hazrat Maulana Rashid Ahmad Gangoi. Later on in his life, he was greatly, greatly inspired and motivated by Sheikh ul Hind, Hazrat Maulana Mahmud ul Hassan Rahmatullah Ali. Now, Sheikh ul Hind Rahmatullah Ali was also a very comprehensive personality. Let me just, I will come to it, inshallah. So, Maulana started off that went to Maulana Rashid Ahmad Gangoi. Maulana Rashid Ahmad Gangoi Rahmatullah Ali then, you know, told him that you go to my Sheikh, who is Haji Imdadullah Muhajir Makki Rahmatullah Ali. So Maulana then had a spiritual attachment to Maulana Rashid Ahmad Gangoi. Maulana Fahim made mention that he was a Khalifa. And thereafter, he also benefited from Haji Imdadullah Muhajir Makki Rahmatullah Ali, and also very greatly inspired by his activism towards Sheikh ul Hind Rahmatullah Ali. In 1915, Maulana made Hajj with Haji Imdadullah Muhajir Makki and Sheikh ul Hind Rahmatullah Ali, and that transformed Maulana's thinking. So anyway, I'm going to go and make mention with regard to it. Let me go to the next slide. The next slide I want to speak about Hazrat Sheikh ul Hind Rahmatullah Ali. And I think the reason why I want to make mention of this is just to understand where Maulana got his political and community activism from. Sheikh ul Hind Rahmatullah Ali was very, very restless about the situation that was upon the Ummah at that time. Now it's quite an amazing thing. We are perhaps the unfortunate part of the Ummah that we didn't see the glory of the Ummah. Because up till 1900s, the Muslim Ummah were established. They were the power of the world. you know, they were the ones that ruled things. And therefore you find that many of the ulama used to speak, when they used to speak about tashabbu, they used to say that tashabbu and imitation is a recent phenomenon. Because in the past, because Muslims were dominant, people were making tashabbu of Muslims. People were imitating Muslims because they were the powerful. And it's a natural thing that you make tashabbu of the people who are powerful. You know, and today that's the reason why we make tashabbu of the Western civilization, unfortunately, amongst much of our ummah. But he said that is why some of the ulama said that tashabbu is something that came recently because of the weakness of the ummah. But be as it may, Shaykhulin Rahmatullahi was very restless. He couldn't confine himself only to teaching. So one of the things that Shaykhulin Rahmatullahi did was, while he was teaching, and bear in mind that even at that time there were ulama who sort of felt that, you know, we only have to concentrate on teachings, on what was normally the established activities of the ulama. Shaykhulin Rahmatullahi thought beyond that. So one of the things that Shaykhulin Rahmatullahi did was that he set up certain, you know, he set up the establishment, and you will see this on the slide, Samaratul Tarbiyah and Nazaratul Ma'arif. So Maulana set up these things, and one of the few reasons with regard to setting it up. So one of the things that Maulana did was, he set up Nazaratul Ma'arif, and he put Maulana Ubaidullah Sindhi in charge of that Nazaratul Ma'arif. And I will read from Asirane Malta directly. Maulana Madni Rahmatullahi writes, the purpose behind establishing Nizaratul Ma'arif was to make Muslim youth strong believers and to instruct and guide especially Western educated Muslims in the Quranic teaching in such a logical way that it would remove the poisonous impact of anti-Islamic propaganda and ill-founded skepticism about the practicality of Islamic beliefs and amal in modern age. So he set up Nazaratul Ma'arif to reach out to young Muslims who were studying in universities. So this was his. And then there were many other situations. One of that was to protect Darul Uloom Deoband, because if, for example, the authorities came to know that, you know, Darul Uloom Deoband was a seat of the Mujahideen or the seat of fighting against British colonial activities, they would take action against the Darul Uloom. So he set up different structures. Nazaratul Ma'arif, Samaratul Tarbiyah. And so this was the aspect of Shaykhulin Rahmatullahi setting up different structures. Now, for that particular aspect, Shaykhulin Rahmatullahi made, not only worked amongst the ulama, he worked also amongst the university students. So one of his very famous, in fact, just few weeks before his passing away, Shaykhulin Rahmatullahi made a very famous visit to Aligarh University to speak to the university students. And he was so ill that he was taken by wheelchair and he was put there in a bed while addressing the students, and he couldn't speak. So he prepared his talk, and amazingly is that at that time, Maulana Shabir Ahmad Usmani Rahmatullahi, who later on became part of, you know, Muslim League and part of establishing Pakistan, just tell you an amazing thing, right? So at that time, his speech was read out to the university students by Maulana Shabir Ahmad Usmani Rahmatullahi. It happened on October 29, 1920, and the following excerpts from that address remain engraved in the pages of history. At this old age, in a state of illness, I come here on your invitation with the hope to find a precious lost treasure. There are many people whose faces are aglow with marks of prayer and remembrance of Allah. But when they are asked to rise up and act in order to protect and save the deprived ummah from the clutches of the disbelievers, their hearts tremble and sink with fear. Whose fear? Not of Allah Ta'ala, but the fear of despicable men and their weapons of war. O students of Aligarh, I come to you that people of my own kind have not been able to understand my restlessness. And I come to you that perhaps you will understand my restlessness. This was a cry of Hazrat Shaykhulin Rahmatullahi when he spoke to the people. And then he said, I have become instrumental in developing a link and relationship between the two great and historical educational institutes, Darul Uloom Deoband and Aligarh Muslim University. And with the very same thing, I won't go into much details, but later on in the book, mention is also made that Jamia Millia was also set up by Shaykh Ulin Rahmatullah Alayh. And in this particular book written by Maulana Muhammad Mia Asirani Malta, he said the idea behind setting up this university was to impart contemporary education to Muslims in an independent and Islamic atmosphere without any aid, assistance and interference of the government. So he set up Jamia Millia. This is now Shaykh Ulin Rahmatullah Alayh. I think it's very interesting for us to understand. Sometimes, you know, we just have a very limited understanding. So our Akabirin set up this infrastructure. They set up this educational institutes, you know, universities, etc. And I can go on making mention with regard to it. He, at that particular time, after the World War I, which happened in 1918, Turkey took the part of the Allies against the British. Right? So because Britain was, you know, colonizing and in rule and authority over India, they got some ulama to take a fatwa against the Ottomans, that the Ottomans are kafirs. And Shaykh Ulin Rahmatullah Alayh refused to sign that fatwa and took a counter fatwa, which came to be known as Tahrik-e-Khilafat, to protect the Usmani Khilafat, to protect the Ottoman Empire. And it is well known that Deoband gave the students off for 1 week to go and do chanda to protect the Usmani Khilafat, to protect the Ottoman Empire. So it was Shaykh Ulin Rahmatullah Alayh who at that time gave a new vision to the ulama in the Muslim Ummah, who were sort of came into a situation of accepting British colonial rule. Hazrat Shaykh Ulin Rahmatullah Alayh. And not only did he do this, very amazingly, and I'm just going to skip through it because I think it's going to be taking much of my time, so I'm just going to speak about Shaykh Ulin Rahmatullah Alayh, just to say very interestingly that he made mention of few things of how to resist the British, which Shaykh Ulin Rahmatullah Alayh, Shaykh Al-Islam Rahmatullah Alayh thereafter inculcated. So he sent Maulana Ubaidullah Sindhi Rahmatullah Alayh to Yaghistan. Yaghistan is present-day Afghanistan. Actually, not the entire Afghanistan, but part of what is today known as Khyber Pakhtun in Pakistan. That area which was ruled by the Pathans and the Pakhtun people. So Maulana, they were waiting for Shaykh Ul Hind to come there, but he then went to Hijaz. He went to Makkah, Medina, and I'll tell you the reason why he went there. And he said, Maulana Ubaidullah Sindhi Rahmatullah Alayh. In the new autobiography, there is 8 pages on Maulana Ubaidullah Sindhi Rahmatullah Alayh. I found it very amazing. So the Maulana in his autobiography spoke about the ulama who were against the British rule. And foremost amongst them, he used Maulana Ubaidullah Sindhi Rahmatullah Alayh. 8 pages here is written about Maulana Ubaidullah Sindhi. And so much so that Maulana Ubaidullah Sindhi went to Afghanistan to try and get them to help the Muslims of India to fight against British rule. Maulana Ubaidullah Sindhi went to Russia to get the help of the Russians to come and fight against British colonial rule. He said he went and he tried to meet Lenin. Lenin was sick, he didn't meet Lenin, but he met the other real rulers of Russia. And in this particular autobiography, there is a quote of one of the British generals in Afghanistan who said one of the reasons we could not occupy Afghanistan was because of Maulana Ubaidullah Sindhi Rahmatullah Alayh. So this was Maulana Ubaidullah Sindhi who was directly from Shaykh Ul Hind. So anyway, this was some of the aspects with regard to Shaykh Ul Hind. And when he went to Hijaz, and that's where I'm going to bring the convergence between Shaykh Ul Hind and Shaykh Ul Islam. He went to Hijaz, and at that particular time, the reason why he went to Hijaz, that the defense minister of the Ottoman Empire, Ghalib Pasha, was in Makkah, Medina. So Maulana went to meet with him to try and get assistance of the Ottoman Empire to fight against the British. So that is that what has happened. Now let me just very briefly go on to another aspect with regard to Shaykh al-Islam, and then come back to where Maulana Shaykh al-Islam met Shaykh al-Hind, and then they were gone and they were in prison in Malta. So in a very young age, after studying in Darulum Deoband, after Maulana Fazlur Rahman Ganj Muradabadi, the sheikh of his father passed away, the father decided that my sheikh has passed away. For me to maintain my spirituality, I want to make my hijrah to Medina. So in that, Maulana then went and they took the entire family, they sold all of their land, and they went to migrate to Medina. And Maulana spent considerable amount of time in Medina. Medina was a very amazing, it was very blessed, very spiritually enlightening, but also very challenging. The great hardship came upon the family while they were in Medina. Maulana writes in his autobiography that I buried 40 of my own family members in Medina Sharif. I buried 40, and there were great amounts of time in which he had a lot of poverty, great amount of difficulty, but it enriched Maulana. He taught hadith in Masjid Nabawi, the very famous anecdote, which many of our ulama write, that some people had doubts about the life of Nabi Karim Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam in the Kaaba. Right. And one day, while Maulana was giving dars, someone objected and said that you people believe in the Nabi Karim Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam being alive, and this is not correct, and this is not like that. And we all know this incident, it is very well mentioned by the anecdotes of our ulama. Maulana said, if you have any doubt, look in that direction. And when the students looked at that direction, they saw Nabi Karim Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. This was done while he was in Dars. So this was how, as Shaykh al-Islam rahmatullahi alayhi taught. And it was not only with regard to teaching. Now, I found a very interesting, in a letter to Maulana Talut, and I will come back to Maulana Talut, because Maulana Talut was the one that intervened in the difference of opinion between Allama Iqbal and Shaykh al-Islam Maulana Madni later on life. He said, I have lived abroad for 17 years, visiting many countries. So someone one day, you know, all of a sudden phoned me, and he said, you know, Maulana says in his autobiography, he visited many countries in Africa, by any chance did he come to South Africa? So I said, no, I don't think he came to South Africa, there is no record. But in his autobiography, he said, I visited many countries. Now, much is not known. But what we do know is that he met many people in Medina. And perhaps maybe that was a reference to meeting different people. So one of the people that he met was, and recently it has come on much of the groups, about Maulana meeting people who were freedom fighters in other countries, on Sheikh Ibrahim and Sheikh bin Baidis, you know. So they came to Medina to make hijrat because of the zulm of the French in Algeria, right? And they felt that maybe they must migrate to Medina. And Maulana told them, no, you don't come and migrate here to Medina. You go back and fight the French. And he told them how to resist the French. They went back and they became part of the anti-colonial activities in Algeria. And one of the sons of the people whom Maulana interacted with, he later on became the foreign minister of one of the countries in North Africa. This was Maulana's influence in Medina Munawwara. He was one of the most sought after hadith teachers in Medina. And in fact, one of the, which added to his financial challenges, Maulana was teaching. And as he was teaching, and he was getting, you know, some financial remuneration, he used to teach many people. And the authorities who were in their darul room, they said, you can't teach other students. And Maulana resigned from that post. How dare you stop me from teaching other students? It is outside the normal time. So in this particular way, Maulana's situation was in Medina, and that was a very amazing part of Maulana's, Hazrat Shaykh al-Islam's life. Carry on from there. Now we say Shaykh ul-Hind rahmatullahi alayhi came to Medina to meet with Ghalib Pasha. Now when he came to Ghalib Pasha, that was the time when the Arabs were revolting against the Ottomans. So the Arabs were revolting, and of course we all know the whole thing, Sharif Hussein and Lawrence of Arabia. They started revolting against the Ottomans. So when they revolted against the Ottomans, Ghalib Pasha, Maulana came to know, was in Taif. So Maulana went with Maulana Hussain Ahmad Madni to go and meet Ghalib Pasha. Then while they were there to go and meet Ghalib Pasha, Sharif Hussein, who had taken control of much of Makkah, Medina and Taif, he arrested Hazrat Shaykh ul-Hind rahmatullahi alayhi. First, it was very difficult to get hold of Shaykh ul-Hind. So he got hold of two of Maulana's companions. So that time, you know, Saudi Arabia didn't have the wealth that it has now. So some of the Indian tradesmen, they went to Sharif Hussein and said, free him, free these two people. He said, I'm not going to free them because I have just recently entered into an agreement with the British. And he favored the British over Shaykh ul-Hind rahmatullahi alayhi. And he gave over Shaykh ul-Hind to the British. And when they could not find Shaykh ul-Hind, he threatened that the two companions of Shaykhul Hind Rahmatullah Ali, I'm going to execute them if Shaykhul Hind does not make himself over to me. And then afterwards he was made over and the British took him. They took him from Jeddah, they took him to Egypt. And Egypt, journey to Hijaz from, right, so they took him in there to Egypt. In Egypt, there is a long conversation and interview they had with Shaykhul Hind Rahmatullah Ali. In the kitab, that whole interview has been recorded and has been preserved. What questions they asked him and what answers he gave. From Egypt, they took him to Malta, and for two and a half years, or two months, Maulana was incarcerated and in prison in Malta. Shaykhul Islam, Maulana Madni Rahmatullah Ali, also joined Shaykhul Hind in prison, although he was not the main person who was supposed to be arrested. But because of his love for his Sheikh, he also became part of the incarceration. And he used to say, the object of my visit to Malta and to be part of Shaykhul Hind Rahmatullah Ali in prison was to serve my Ustad. And we all know the very famous incident. There is so much mention of his khidmat to his Ustad that because there was cold water, and in Malta, we all know Europe can become very cold, Hazrat Shaykhul Islam, Maulana Madni Rahmatullah Ali, used to keep water, cold water, here on his stomach throughout the night, so that when Shaykhul Hind Rahmatullah Ali used to get up for tahajjud, the water used to become somewhat lukewarm and not as cold as it coming directly from the tap. And he used to present that water to Hazrat Shaykhul Hind Rahmatullah Ali to make wuzu at the time of tahajjud. And of course, the other aspect was to learn Turkish and also to advance spirituality and to complete the memorization of the Quran. There is one riwayat that says that in 1 month he made hifz of the Quran to be able to recite Taraweeh. So this was where Maulana, and of course there also there were one or two people. Hakim Nusrat is the one who was part and parcel of the people who was also incarcerated with them, and he passed away in Malta. So Maulana then started off, you know, in Malta, and after Malta he came back, and he came back to India. Now when he came back to India, he increased his effort against the British. Now they seem to remember the time that the British first came into India as the East India Trading Company. They came in under the guise of trading, under the guise of business people. They came in more from the south of India, and then they steadily gained influence, and then they were helped by the British in terms of the army, and then over a 100-year period, they gained complete control over India. And Shaykhul Islam Rahmatullah Ali goes on to make mention with regard to his passion about the British. In his autobiography, in fact, mention is made that in much of his bayans that he used to speak, even with the Muslim Ummah, he used to speak about the harms that came upon India because of British rule. Now, well before Shashi Tharoor has become somewhat famous recently, and of course Shashi Tharoor became famous because in the Oxford debates, Shashi Tharoor made the point that, and he wrote a book known Inglorious Empire, that how Britain plundered India and made India poor. He said when Britain came into India, India was the third wealthiest nation in the world. They were the third wealthiest. At the time they left, it was number 27 or number 30, somewhere there. He said that was the impact of British rule. Now long, and then he said that there must be a financial repatriation from the Britain, even if it's a token one. Shashi Tharoor, you know, a very famous Oxford debate, there must be a repatriation for them to acknowledge the harm they did to India. Well before Shashi Tharoor wrote this, Shaykhul Islam, Maulana Madni Rahmatullah Ali, has made mention in his books about the harm that came upon India because of British rule. He speaks about the moral harm. He speaks about the harm with regard to the disputes. He said there used to be such a remarkable institute of how people used to resolve their disputes at village level. And then he gives a whole, details about it in his autobiography. And even more, he speaks about the economic situation. And this is well known, that, you know, India had an amazing amount of weavers. that used to weave the best in terms of the cloth. Those weavers who were experts, the British actually broke their hands and broke their shoulders that they must not be allowed to weave because of some benefit coming upon the Muslims and the Indian tradesmen. He used to say that they used to take the raw material at at very minimal prices from the Indians, take it to Britain and refine it, and then at a considerable amount, percentage of profit, they used to sell it back to the Indian market. So they used to make money while buying at a very reduced cost, and then come and sell the very same item at a very exorbitant cost. And Maulana, in his autobiography, gives the whole details with regard to that. And Maulana became very, very passionate with regard to resisting the British. And this was part of it. And one of the things that he made mention with regard to it is that how do we do it? We don't have the ability, we don't have the situation with regard to it. So I'll just give you one or two things with regard to what was the way of how they were going to deal with it. So one of the things was, on page 165 of this book by Goyal, Sheikh Ulin Rahmatullah Ali has made mention of a three-point plan of how to resist the British. Right. So one of them was, he said that one was unity with the non-Muslims. So they got the Hindus together to resist the British. He said, we will not be able to fight the British on our own. We must get the local people to come in. And in this particular way, the British were very, very keen to exacerbate the Hindu-Muslim divide. And Maulana Sheikh Ulin Rahmatullah Ali and Sheikh Al-Islam were trying to bring the Hindu-Muslims together to fight against the British. So he said, we must bring the Hindu-Muslims together to fight against the British. And then we don't have the means to be able to resist them. We will resist them by non-cooperation and economic boycott. So people still talk about boycott in today's time with regard to Palestine. The boycott call came from our ulama. And, you know, we studied in Karachi. So when we used to study in Karachi, there was a very famous hall known as the Khalid Dinner Hall. So in the Khalid Dinner Hall, Maulana was summoned. And there was a court case that took place in the Khalid Dinner Hall. Now today, Khalid Dinner Hall is a hall that is, you know, surrounded by bazaars. So it has become somewhat overwhelmed by the bazaars. But once upon a time, it was a very famous landmark in Karachi. And every time we used to go past, we always used to think about Sheikh Al-Islam Maulana Madni, because it was in this particular hall that he was tried. Right? And he was thereafter tried. So when he was tried, the judge asked him, did you give a fatwa that it is haram to cooperate with the British? And every Muslim in India and Pakistan must refuse to cooperate in any way with the British. And the view and the objective was, if you don't cooperate, British rule comes to an end. No, how will they be able to govern? When the people don't govern, there's no bureaucrats, there's no one to do the work. So he said, so did you give this fatwa? So Maulana Muhammad Ali Johar, and later on, you know, Maulana Muhammad Ali Johar and Sheikh al-Islam had a difference of opinion on a particular matter. Let me just quickly go through this. So Maulana thereafter, he said that Maulana Muhammad Ali Johar called the Kurta of Sheikh al-Islam, that please be careful how you reply to it, because if you say yes, it is treason for which you can be executed. And treason is death. So Maulana Madni Rahmatullah Ali gave his famous reply. Maulana Muhammad Ali, if I change my word, my iman will change. And he told the judge, what do you mean I gave? I still give this fatwa. It is haram for every Muslim to participate and to cooperate with the British. For some reason, although that particular statement could have ended up in execution, he was jailed in Central Jail, which was not very far from our madrasa where we studied. It was about 2-3 kilometers away from our madrasa. So Maulana was, there was many times that he was a stuff. Anyway, these were some of the aspects that Maulana made mention with regard to it. So in his resistance, he also cooperated with Congress and other parties who were part and parcel of resisting. In fact, initially, the Congress were not in favor of resisting the British. When Congress started off its, you know, as a party, they only objective was that how can we get some sort of concessions from the British government. It was Maulana Madni Rahmatullah Ali and Sheikhul Islam Rahmatullah Ali who took them on the path of resistance. And you know, and I, you know, here in this particular boardroom of the Jamiat, I think it was Maulana Mahmood Madani who came, and he made mention with regard to it to us that when the Congress were meeting once to decide who must become the president of Congress, it was Sheikhul Hind Rahmatullah Ali who said that Congress must be led by Gandhi. And the reason for that was that until you don't get the majority of the people against the British, you would not be able to remove the British. And he was very passionate of removing the British from India. And when Gandhi became the president of Congress, he told Maulana, what must I do now? What must I do? You know, you made me now the president, what must I do? So at that particular time, Sheikhul Hind Rahmatullah Ali said, go village to village and tell the people not to cooperate with the British. So Gandhi took the train, and through the train he went village to village, and that became part of the Congress non-cooperation. So these are some of the things that I go. There is a talk about the boycott strategy, and in, I made a note of it in page 138 and 139 of the book Sirane Malta. Then Maulana also came, you know, so the aspect came about at that particular time when the British decided to partition India. All right, so the idea of partitioning came into by the British. So Maulana was very, very against partition. Now we all know that there was a difference of opinion between the ulama with regard to Pakistan. Maulana Thanvi, Maulana Shabir Ahmad Usmani, the Muslim League, they favored partition. Maulana was against partition. Right? He felt that Muslims must remain in there. He even had a formula of having specific amount of Muslim representation in government. And that particular formula is made mention in his book and his autobiography, how he had actually divided and how he had actually come to that particular formula of Muslim representation. And I, as someone whom, I must tell you, you know, on a personal level, there was a time when I was studying in Pakistan, I was more inclined towards the pro-Pakistan narrative. I was by and large more inclined towards that. Over the years, now when I read Sheikhul Islam Rahmatullah Ali, I don't say I still make a definitive type of judgment on the matter. I say Allah Ta'ala knows best. But there is a certain degree of saying that perhaps would be things have turned differently if the view of Maulana Madni Rahmatullah Ali would have been implemented. Allah knows best. But you see, we can't talk about it. But just keep in mind with regard to some of his views. He was very, very pissed off that this particular matter of divide and rule, creating a Hindu and Muslims to go through, is something that was actually the objective of the British to weaken India. He even made mention, and this is something that we always talk about, the ulama don't have vision. Maulana, in one of his writings in his autobiography, said that if you are going to break up the subcontinent, the entire, now you remember the subcontinent is India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, and perhaps part of Afghanistan, if it had been one country, it would have been a tremendous block, it would have been such a great country. By breaking it up, you become weak. And when you become weak, the superpowers of the time, whether it be America, whether it be Russia, of course, we all know for a great amount of time, there were the two superpowers, America and Russia. Then for you to survive, you would have to be dependent upon one of the two superpowers. So a very great period of time, Pakistan was regarded to be pro-West and pro-America. And of course, India were regarded to be pro-Russia. But later on, obviously, things have now changed because of economic dynamics or other dynamics. So he said, if there is one country, you would have been one particular block. And in this particular way, Maulana was of the view that no, you know. So this particular way, even one of the reasons why they supported Congress was because Congress in 1930 had a meeting and they decided against partition, and they wanted a united nation initially. In 1930, their view was they wanted one particular country, a united nationhood. And because of that, Maulana was in favor of Congress. He became a member of the Congress, and in one of his writings, he wrote, I'm a card-carrying member of the Indian National Congress. I pay my dues every year. And one of the reasons was that because he wanted a united country, and he didn't want the country to be broken. So another point that is there in this government, anyway, there was this whole particular aspect of partition is a very long-standing type of thing, how the ulama differed with regard to it. And, you know, there are just two views. It's well known. As I said, I don't take a particular view and saying which one is right. The ulama differed, Allah Ta'ala knows, with regard to what it is. But now on the question of nationhood, the political views with regard to Hazrat Maulana Shaykhul Islam Rahmatullah Ali, I think this is very important. Maulana also felt, and he wrote it in his autobiography, he felt that the Muslim League were in cahoots with the British government. He even narrated that how many times they went to London, and he felt that there were certain negotiations that took place between Muslim League and the British, which seemed to favour the fact that they wanted this to break up. Anyway, these were some of the things that we can just make mention of. And one of the things that I'm going to make mention, I'm going to have to just go very quickly about it, was Maulana's political views, Qaum and Millat. Maulana made the difference between Qaum and Millat, and this is something that created great amount of controversy at that time. Maulana made mention, and he differentiated between Qaum, Millat, and Deen. He said, Deen Islam, Inna Deena Indallah al-Islam, we believe in the... And also one thing you must remember, that when Maulana made mention with regard to, you know, with the Congress, you know, he made very clear that one of the reasons why he joined Congress was one principle. There must be no interference from any of the communities in the religious matters of one another. And he even made mention of one or two times when this was violated. And Maulana stood up and said that our joining Congress was on this particular basis, that there will be no interference on religious matters. And Maulana, you know, made mention with regard to it. Now, this particular aspect about composite nationalism is something that we have to keep in mind. And I think I'm going to, I don't know if I've got the time, but I'll just briefly make mention with regard to it. Maybe let him, without going into the kitab, because then it will take too much time. But Maulana goes on to say that one is Qaum, your nationality, your ethnicity. One is Millat. Millat, you talk about the Ummat. And Qaum, he means your nation. Like, we are Indian people. We are Gujaratis. Now, Gujaratis could mean people who are Gujarat, from Gujarat, even if they are Muslim, they are non-Muslim. They are Gujaratis. You are South African. You are South African, although maybe the nation does not so much apply to South Africans because it is a country. But of course, let us say, for the example, the Khoisans or the Zulus. So a person can become a Khoisa as his nation, despite the fact that within Khoisas or within Zulus, they might be Christians, they might be Muslims, they must be people of other faiths also. Right? Or there must be people who have got the African indigenous faith. So Maulana made the distinction between Qaum, Millat, and Deen. And this created a great amount of controversy, and Allama Iqbal wrote against Maulana that our identity is only on the basis of the Ummah, innama al-mu'minuna ikhwa. And Maulana then wrote a 2 or 3 page letter in explaining himself. He said, I've never ever said that we must compromise our deen or we must compromise our millat. But we are part and parcel of India. And because we are part and parcel of India, we are part of one nation. And because of one particular nation, we are, that's where he wrote the composite nationalism, the nationalism that come of India being part of different faith groups and how they must live together as different faith groups for the benefit of India, for the prosperity of India, for the safety and security of India. Now, this was a very great departure of an ideal type of state. We can only exist in an Islamic state. Maulana's views will impact greatly upon people like whom we are in South Africa or UK. You are part of a state. You put your shoulder to the wheel with regard to seeing to it that there is prosperity in the country that you live. And you play whatever role you can do. Whether it is, and Maulana gave this example with regard to if there is a fire in a village. If there is a fire in a village and there are people who are Muslims and non-Muslims in that particular place, what do you do? Do you say, no, we only as Muslims are going to take out and extinguish the fire? Or are you going to jointly extinguish that fire? Huh? And he said, that is the understanding, what I had of composite nationalism. That we are in one country, we are in one particular location, territorially, and it is our duty to, in that particular way, to have a composite nationalism based on that particular view. And he stressed upon the importance of resisting colonialism by being Muslims and Hindus coming together to resist it. And of course, one of the things that happened at that time. Maulana Muhammad Ali Johar Rahmatullah Ali, also a very great freedom fighter. He was a very great freedom fighter, so much so that he said, I don't want to die and I don't want to be buried in an occupied land. And Maulana Muhammad Ali Johar Rahmatullah Ali is buried next to Masjid-e-Aqsa. And in there is Ratan Sheikh-e-Hindi, in next to Masjid-e-Aqsa. So, but Maulana Muhammad Ali Johar was part of the Muslim League, who was in favor of Pakistan. And they came up with a slogan. What was their slogan? Assurance before cooperation. Before we can cooperate with the Congress, we want assurance of certain Muslim rights. Maulana Madni Rahmatullah Ali said, we don't want any assurance. Let us fight for freedom. Once we get freedom, we will fight amongst ourselves. What are we going to do? So Maulana Muhammad Ali Johar had assurance before cooperation. Maulana said, no, let us gain freedom. After we gain freedom as free people, we will decide with our own country people what is good for us. And we will fight amongst ourselves. I sometimes think about it as something similar with what regard to the liberation movements here had said, liberation before education. Allah knows whether it was good or not, but that was their slogan, liberation before education. And once we are free, we will decide about our educational policy. Anyway, so Maulana had this amazing, and I think I'm just going to come to that. Maulana had a very, very, wide vision. And part of those particular vision was that because you must remember that India was the most vital resource for the British colonialism. They had milked India dry. After World War II, they diverted funds from India for the war machine, right, to fight against the Germans. So much so that there was widespread famine and there was no food. And there was over hundreds and thousands of people who died of famine because of what the British did to the people of India. Right? So Maulana said that India is the crown in the British jewel. If we gain freedom from Britain, all the countries who are under colonial rule in India, they will also be able to gain motivation to fight against the colonialism. So Maulana had this vision. So this was, I think one of the greatest things, and I will conclude with this, was we only speak about the political vision. We don't realize his greatness. Hazrat Maulana Abul Hasan Nabi Rahmatullah Ali has written much about, Sheikh al-Islam. And some of his writings are very, very amazing. He said that in one day he quotes Maulana Manzoor Nomani Rahmatullah Ali. Maulana Manzoor Nomani Rahmatullah Ali had written and said, I have read Kunut Nazila behind many ulama. Whenever the Muslims were in difficulty, we read Kunut Nazila. He said, but two Kunut Nazilas that I read behind, it made my hair stand on its end. He said, when you used to read Kunut Nazila behind these two ulama, it used to shake you. One was Sheikh al-Islam, Maulana Madni Rahmatullah Ali, and one was Maulana Yusuf Sab Rahmatullah Ali, the son of Maulana Ilyas Sab Rahmatullah Ali. Maulana, after partition, took a stance that we are going to fight for Muslims to stay in India. Right? So many people, great amount of people went. 1 million people were killed in the partition. Because of the moving around, it created great amount of enmity and hostility. Because of the enmity and hostility, people were moving, and people looked upon the Muslims who were moving as some sort of betrayal to the cause. So they started moving and they're killing. Most of the people who were killed were Muslims. Right? So 1 million people, conservatively, some people say it was even more than that, were killed. And Maulana Hussain Madni Rahmatullah Ali was at pains to say, you created this division, you created this hostility. And this is perhaps one of the reasons that actually happened. After independence, Maulana went village to village to go and tell the Muslims, you remain here. Because part and parcel of the Indian constitution was everyone is equal. You have a constitutional right. You have your dignity. You have your freedom to be able to stay here. Maulana Abdullah Kapodri, Rahmatullah Ali, in this particular boardroom, one day I asked him because he wrote it somewhere. So I told him, Maulana, I read it, but I want to listen to it from you directly. He said, Maulana came to Gujarat, after independence, and he went village to village to tell people, you remain here. The Allah that is in Pakistan is the same Allah that is in India. You remain here. He said he came back one day very late. I asked the people who were organizing this trip, I want to make khidmat, let me sleep in his room. I was 13 years of age. They told me, all right, sleep in his room. I went to sleep in his room. He said, Maulana came back way back after 11 o'clock. And he said he came back There was a beautiful mattress and bed prepared for him. He used to always travel with a small sleeping bag. He took out his own sleeping bag. He started sleeping. He took that particular. And he said, after 2-3 hours, I heard someone crying like a baby. I got up. And I saw Muhammad bin Abdul Ali crying like a baby. Oh Allah, protect the Muslims of India. Oh Allah, protect them. So this was Maulana. You know, he had such amazing sincerity. He used to sign his papers and his books and his letters, Nangya Aslaf. You know, the disgrace of the predecessors. This is how he used to. He avoided fanfare. When he came back once, I think it was from the Karachi jail, you know, they had prepared for a massive welcome for him in Deoband. So they all came. They're expecting him to come at a particular time because that's the time the ticket was there. Maulana came to know about it. He changed his ticket. He came 2 o'clock in the morning. No one was there. He came quietly and he went to his house. He just completely shunned adulation. He shunned pomp and splendor. And afterwards, they wanted to give him from the government of India, you know, a particular shield in recognition. He refused to take it. Despite the fact that he used to fawn. And this, I will just conclude with it because there's so many things. Maulana used to, you know, fight for Muslim rights because afterwards there were communal riots that took place in the beginning stages. Maulana went to one day he went to Nehru and he went to Gandhi because there was right wings in everyone. One of the right wing elements within the Congress was Sardar Patel. Sardar Patel was the first person to ask for away from United Nationhood of the original view of the Congress. Sardar Patel was the first one to bring about the aspect of partition, and thereafter Congress became part of the people who also agreed upon partition. So Sardar Patel was very dismissive of Muslim rights. And Maulana used to oppose him in every level. One time, you know, Nehru called up Sardar Patel in the presence of Maulana Madni to rebuke him because he regarded Muslim rights as inferior. And Maulana, one day he phoned the police of that particular UP area and he said, you have given us guarantee that if we stay behind in India, our rights and our lives will be protected. There is Muslim-Hindu riots that are taking place in a particular place where Muslims have been killed. Either you fulfill your responsibility, otherwise we will go up and protect ourselves, whatever means we have. And if we do so, don't call us and say we are propagating violence because you are going against your word. You know? So these were some of the things. He, despite of the fact that after independence, he took a back seat. You know, he concentrated mostly on his teaching. One or two times he did make interventions. One of the most prominent interventions was Qari Tayyib Sahib Rahmatullah Ali, who later on became the director of Darul Uloom Deoband. Qari Tayyib Sahib Rahmatullah Ali decided to migrate to Pakistan. And after migrating to Pakistan, he you know, regretted it and he wanted to come back to India. So, but at that time there was a rule. Anyone, once you migrate, you cannot come back to your place of return. You cannot come back to your place where you have migrated from. It's a decision you must make. So when he went to Maulana Abul Kalam Azad, he said, listen, this is a rule, we can't go against the rule. But Qari Tayyib Sahib Rahmatullah Ali pleaded with Maulana Hussain Ahmad Madni, and one morning, Maulana Hussain Ahmad Madni Rahmatullah Ali went to the President of India at that time, the Prime Minister Nehru, and he knocked on his door, and someone went to tell Nehru that Maulana Hussain Ahmad Madni is here at the door. Nehru left everything and said, Hazrat, if you had any work, you should have told me, I would have come to see you. What have you come for? He said, I've never come to ask you for anything. But I've come to ask you with regard to Qari Tayyib Sahib. He wants to come back, allow him to come back. Nehru immediately there gave a letter to say Qari Tayyib Sahib Rahmatullah Ali must come back. And then Qari Tayyib Sahib became the rector of Darul Uloom Deoband for 37 years. So these were some of the minimum interventions he took place. And he took the view, like, you know, he said that you can have a difference of opinion with regard to a masjid coming at a particular place. But once a masjid is made, then you accept the masjid irrespective of your own views. And the same is my situation with regard to Pakistan. I was opposed to Pakistan, but once it is established, I make dua for the prosperity of Pakistan. And that was Muhammad bin Rahmatullah Ali's view. So these were some of the aspects. I don't think I've even covered many of the aspects that I had in this book, which I've made notes, but I just hope it gives you some form of, you know, understanding of the personality and the views of Maulana. And I will conclude with that. I do apologize for the extended time that I have taken.
We will open the floor now for questions and input from the participants. If you would like to ask a question, you could type it in the chat directly to my brother, and I'll read it out, inshallah. Or you could raise your hand virtually and give you an opportunity to speak. Some questions have come through, and I'll read that out now. But one thing I would just like to maybe just give a small input here from my side. You know, what stands out for me in this presentation is that the priority, as you know, one of the slides you did speak about priority. And, you know, the book that you made reference to, which is this recently published, Naqshe Hayat, Maulana's autobiography that's been a plagiarism in English by Ismail Adel. There is, on page 136, there's a very interesting incident that stood out for me when I was reading the book, is that when Maulana, when Sheikh ul-Hind started his resistance against the British, took a pledge for jihad, Maulana Shah Abdul Rahim Rai Puri, who was, you know, he expressed concern. It says in the book that if the British were to find out, it would pose a great risk. And when this came to Sheikh ul-Hind, he then said that, and I'm reading from the book now, he said, Maulana Qasim Nanotri's supplication to Allah was that Darul provide service for 50 years. By His mercy, this period is over and it has fulfilled its role. So this stood out for me quite starkly because it showed the importance that he gave to the resistance, even if it had to be at the expense of the Darul Uloom. I just wanted to point it out because, you know, these are the priorities that our Qabil had, not forgetting that Sheikh ul-Hind was the first student of Darul Uloom, one of the foremost students of Maulana Qasim Nanotri. So it's just something that I want to say that stood out from that book. There have been some questions on the chat that